Same stories. Shakespeare, you know, like those plays we went to see at the Old Globe. Anita?
Hey, Mom.
Want something to eat?
Oh, no thanks. I already ate.
Are you sure? I made soy cutlets.
I'm fine. I already ate.
Wait. You've been kissing.
No, I haven't.
Yes, you have.
No, I haven't.
Yes, you have. I can tell.
You can't tell.
Not only can I tell, I know who it is. It's Daryl. What you got under your coat?
It's unfair that we can't listen to our music.
It's because it is about drugs and promiscuous sex.
Simon and Garfunkel is poetry.
Yes, it's poetry. It is the poetry of drugs and promiscuous sex. Honey, they're on pot.
From Buffalo, New York, where the smell of Cheerios never quite overtakes the fetor of desperation, it's the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast.
Welcome to the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast, where we talk about the good, the bad, and the funny of being a DIY musician in the 716. I'm Ryan Gurnett.
And I'm Dennis Reed Jr. Hello.
And we're excited for this episode. We're going to have an interview that we had back in June with Art Voice's Best Hip-Hop Act of 2012, 13, and 14, the multi-talented Mr. AJ Jordan.
Yeah.
We're going to learn how incarceration in a youth detention center can provide the skills you need to make it in the rap world.
We're going to learn what happens when you're about to open for the Insane Clown Posse at 3 a.m. and you've only had half a gallon of Jack, and then you give the Juggalos fireworks.
We are going to learn what a hype man is. Dennis.
I'm going to find out.
Dennis is going to learn what a hype man is because everyone else knows what a hype man is.
I play sad rock. And we're also going to learn what you do on your 25-city tour when you're already $3,000 in the hole by City 5. It's a great interview. AJ had some really good stories to tell, and we'll be having that for you in about 10 minutes.
Yes.
Wasn't he the subject of a viral video recently, Ryan?
He proposed to his girlfriend in front of, I'm going to get this wrong, Stone Sour, I believe is the name of the band.
Is that a country band?
No. I believe they're fronted by the guy from Slipknot?
Okay. Who's their hype man?
No hype man there. It took off. I saw it all over Facebook. You know, first it was just from AJ talking about it on his page, and then all of a sudden you start seeing it in other places. And
what was the venue?
Oh, boy.
Was it in Buffalo?
No, it was not.
Oh, okay.
I want to say, like, Chicago. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it was an out-of-town thing, and they had a meet-and-greet with the band.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're doing... Oh, yeah, that's what I should explain. As they're doing the meet-and-greet with the band,
yeah.
He proposes to his girlfriend there.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Like, the band is lined up behind them as he's proposing. And I guess, you know...
He had it prearranged with them?
I think the band was just as surprised as she was.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he organized this. He just went for it.
Well,
and
yeah.
That's
oh,
awesome. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, well, good for him.
Certainly a...
The balls move.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but you got to be sure. You wouldn't do something like that unless you knew the answer was 100% yes, right? Would you, if you like, thought there was any chance of a girl saying, like when you proposed your wife, was it a done deal? Was there any chance that she was going to be like, I don't think so, buddy. Like, I just met you on the subway.
Interesting story about me and my wife getting engaged is that we had a wedding to go to the next night, and we were just getting ready for bed. And I'm like, so what do you think about you and I in the long term?
Mm-hmm.
And
how many hours had you been dating?
This was around 1 year.
Okay.
And, we started we were about to go to a wedding the next day, so we're talking about, like, oh, who would be, what are our first dance be, and stuff like that. And apparently she took that as me proposing to her. So I always joke that it was me being like, so, how do you feel about the state of the relationship? And she just goes, yes, I'll marry you. I didn't propose, but
she
I
answered.
Think I did, yeah.
Well, it worked out, apparently. Now you guys have been together for quite some time. And but would you have done that in public, though, if you thought there was any chance that you would have been...
I am such, like, a nervous OCD guy that I don't think I could propose at all if I didn't think it was 100%.
Yeah.
That seems like it'd be...
That could be devastating.
That could be crushing.
Well, the man gambled and won, and we'll put a link in our show notes. There's a couple things we're going to talk about today. I'd like to put a link in the show notes.
Sounds good.
Do you want to talk about crazy promoters? I mean, AJ kind of is, in some of the stories he's going to tell us, he kind of is the crazy promoter running across the country in his 25-city tour.
His story about performing in Chicago and having just an out-of-control promoter he was dealing with kind of put me in the mindset of thinking about, you know, the times when a musician shows up to something and it's just like, this wasn't what I was expecting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I played a show at Broadway Joe's, and I got contacted, and they're like, this band, I'm not going to name them because they're still a performing band, even though I don't care for them. They said, they're making their triumphant return to Buffalo. And that was what it said on the Facebook event. Blank makes their triumphant return to Buffalo. And I'm like, all right. And I talked to the promoter on the phone, and he's like, do you want to sell tickets? And I said, no, because I'm an adult, and adults don't do that. I perform and do some of the advertising. Yeah. They sell the tickets. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how it works here, or should work.
Yeah, yeah. People do get rooked all the time, but.
And he's like, "Oh well, the other band sold 40 tickets," and I'm like, "Well, that's really good for them. They've got more friends than me." So we get to the show and we played our set for. I don't even think I think the band didn't even like us and like went in the back, so we didn't perform to anyone.
Ouch.
And by the time they got on stage, two people were there.
Ouch.
It's just like, you told me 40 people, like, 40 people, like, this.
Yeah, apparently he was just trying to, you know.
Just trying to push me.
Yeah, yeah, use that to inspire you.
And when I'd taken two East Coast tours in my lifetime, like, 2 to 3 weeks, and in one of them, near, like, the last quarter of the tour, we played a show in Alliance, Ohio. Wonderful place. Really, really weird, but, like, tons of kids came out to our show, and it was really fun. And then the next day, we had to drive 18 hours and get to New York City to play, I believe it's called The Pyramid, in New York on New Year's Eve. And fantastic.
Sounds promising.
I get to play New York City.
I can close my eyes and see, like, the Bill Graham poster, you know, for that.
Yes, exactly.
Sounds like it could be epic.
So we ended up being a little confused by it because... The promoter told us it was a sold-out event and then asked us if we wanted to sell tickets.
To your Buffalo friends.
This is like, I was in Albany at the time. So,
okay, to your
I
Albany
mean,
friends.
Equally ineffective.
Sure.
But, and we got there and we played for no one.
Ouch.
Like, the promoter didn't even show up. Like, no one. The stage was, like, so small.
Surprise.
We were a six-piece band at the time, and the stage was so small you couldn't even move. Like, we just could put a camera in one position. We didn't even have to move it all night when we taped the set. It's just this one really bizarre point of view.
Oh, yeah.
Because we can't move, and we want to
diagonal
punch everyone in the face, except there's no one there to punch in the face because the show's so terrible.
So we punched ourselves and one another.
And then I've got one more.
Okay, one more story about...
This
wasn't what I signed up
this
for.
This is what I was expecting. It was Eden's Winterfest. This was like 1998 or 1999, so we're going back. And they told us we're playing at the VFW Hall in Eden. It's a big, like, young band music event, so cool. So we drive out to Eden. It's like Bania February, so it's like, I think it was like 15 degrees tops. It was a cold night. And we get to the venue, and we're like, oh, there's the VFW. We walk in the door. It's like six old ladies playing bingo in this big gymnasium with a stage. I'm like, this looks like the place. And I'm like, and I finally find someone in charge. I'm like, where are we playing? And they're like, oh, you're playing in the building across the street. Because it was just like a little driveway with a few different little buildings.
Yeah.
We get out there, and she's like, you're right there. And I'm like, I'm like, there? And she's like, yeah, that's where you are. We were playing outside.
Yeah, you weren't even in the establishment.
No, it was. It looked like they were working on building like a porch area outside of one of the buildings that wasn't complete, and they just put up blue tarp around, and then we played outdoors.
Did they run some power out there at least for you?
There was the way it was set up was there was a stage on the left side of the room and the right side of the room, so there wasn't any like change up time.
Mm-hmm.
There was one power strip shared by both bands. And at one point in the set, people were dancing, and someone hit the power strip, and everything just went dead.
Oh, that's amazing. That'll bring a party down fast. I guess I've had a couple where, not so much I blame promoters for. I played for a while in a cover country band. I played bass guitar, and they got a lot of good gigs. One girl, she's a really good songwriter who led it. And we had one gig one time. It promised to be pretty wild. It was at the Niagara Falls Air Force Base. And we were going to play, you know, for like a holiday show, a Christmas show. And I thought that sounds pretty, because she would line up some nice gigs. You know,
yeah.
She was a really, really talented singer and a good band. So we get to this place. Cell phone's off, please, during the performance, during the podcast. Thank you. If you at home would please follow suit, silence your devices. It seemed like it was going to be a pretty awesome gig, but we get there and it's in an airplane hangar, which is kind of cool. Like,
yeah,
I was,
absolutely.
You know, it's a different situation. I didn't know what the acoustics would be like, and they actually ended up not being that bad because it was so big and we weren't loud enough for it to really bounce back because like the hangar's so vast. But anyways, we set up, and unfortunately the layout and the occasion was such that all of the people who were coming home, I guess they were just coming home from a deployment or a training or something. I don't really know how the military works.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a bunch of people in uniform who showed, as we were playing this set of Christmas music in this country band, to basically, I mean, there was like just maybe like 30 people kind of looking at us. But then at the other end, you know, these were just civilians. At the other end of the hangar, the actual, like, you know, people enlisted in the Air Force came home, and everybody rushed to the other end of this massive hangar to leave us sitting there at the other end just playing Christmas songs
to
nobody, to a bunch of backs. So,
and probably some airplanes.
And were there actually airplanes? I think there was an airplane actually in the hangar at that point. So that was kind of disappointing.
So, Dennis.
You always got to watch out for those promoters. That's
absolutely do. They'll get you.
Vampires, some of them, too. Like, larger incidence of vampirism. Do you know that?
I didn't before, but...
Well, look it up.
But they are a pain in my neck.
Hey, yo.
Ayo.
Look it up. It's on the internet.
Yo, this is AJ Jordan the Crescendo, and you're listening to The Struggle Is Real, Buffalo Music Podcast, on all WNYnews.com.
Perfect.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody. What I'm going to do is tell you a song that is a true story. It happened to me in a bar when I was playing there about a year and a half ago, and this is what happened. I was dancing in a nightclub one Friday night, and that nightclub bar was a little uptight. It was. I was dancing all alone, a little self-conscious, when some kids came up and said, "Jonathan, for dancing, come with us." And soon I was dancing in the lesbian bar. Oh, oh. I was dancing in the lesbian bar. Oh, oh, oh.
Guitar.
So I'm sorry. You started the set.
All right. Dennis.
Yeah.
Seen any good music lately?
Actually, it's funny you should ask. I did. I went to Nietzsche's on Saturday the 11th, and I saw Jonathan Richman there. And do you know Jonathan Richman? You know anything about him?
The name sounds a little familiar, but
I knew absolutely,
I'm not. I don't really know anything.
I knew nothing. My friend, our mutual friend Dave, told me about him a while ago and sent me some videos that, for whatever reason, didn't pique my interest. But then, last week he said he's coming around. He sent me... he didn't send me a video, but I looked up on my own a song from this Jonathan. He was in the Modern Lovers, I guess. He was like a punk group.
I feel like I should know one of their songs. I
you
know that name.
You probably do, but I went to look up some of these songs, and they were great. There was one, like, I Went Dancing at a Lesbian Bar was there, and it's just like, really funny. It's like quirky, you know, sort of like sharp observations and kind of like... you know, wistful and earnest, too, like, at the same time. Like, he's really kind of an unexpected character.
Interesting.
Yeah, and he plays really quiet. It was just him and a drummer. at Nietzsche's on the 11th. And it was packed in there, too. Like, it was a pretty awesome crowd. It was Folk Fest, actually. Later on, they had, like, a bunch of folk bands up there. But he was, I think he kind of kicked, I think he was, like, a separate, because I paid for tickets for, you know, just to see him. But he plays kind of quietly because, I guess, like, he's trying to preserve his hearing. But he was, a couple of the people who are in the Modern Lovers, my friend Dave was telling me about this, went on to be, like, one of them was the guitar player for the Talking Heads.
Okay.
And there was somebody else, too, like a drummer for somebody, like a pretty, like, legit act. So he definitely had, you know, he was running with the big dogs there early on in his career. And it was what a wonderful performance at Nietzsche's. It was really cool. Like, he was very, just like, in the moment, a lot of talking with the crowd, like, a lot of back and forth. Like, you know, for instance, in one song about the summer, he was calling out for images to the crowd for what their impressions of summer were, you know, because he was, like, singing, like, you know, and the smell of flowers on the hills. We're like, what does anybody else think of? And somebody yelled out, garbage! And he's like, no, that's good. That's good, actually. Everybody started laughing, and then he worked in the hot garbage line about it and totally made it work. And then there was this other, like, super surreal moment. I mean, we'll put this in the show notes, too. You guys just got to see this guy. But he was singing a song. Okay, so he was dressed in, like, a striped shirt, like an Italian-looking shirt, like black and white horizontal stripes.
Okay.
You know, those shirts. I mean, they kind of look French, too. Like, Frenchies wear them, too. Maybe we'll call it a continental look.
Ooh.
Yeah, so he was in this thing, and it's kind of like his trademark, you know? Like, I see, like, back in the 90s, he was on Conan with this, like, probably the same shirt. but he started singing this song, which he did a lot of things that were kind of, like, impressionistic. Like, it seemed like spur of the moment. Like, he was just kind of, like, you know, kind of vibing, and he sang a song where all he was singing was, let me see, I put it down in my notes here. Why do you dress in Italian shirts? Why won't you let us go home? He kept singing that over and over again, and I'm pretty convinced that he was, like, you know, kind of channeling, like ironically channeling, like, what people were thinking, encountering the spectacle of him. Like, I don't have any explanation for the lyrics, why do you dress in Italian shirts? Why won't you let us go home? So that was just, like, one of the just, like, kind of cool moments of the night. It was really entertaining.
That sounds like a cool show.
Yeah, it was great. What about you? You've been out and about?
I was at the Trelf last Saturday and saw J.D. McPherson and his lovely band. And
Are they lovely? Are they lovely men or lovely women?
They're lovely men.
Okay.
They're lovely musicians.
Fair enough.
And it was fantastic. He is he's from Oklahoma, I want to say. It's kind of middle America-ish. And I thought it was going to be more kind of a rockabilly show, but they were really, like, all over the map. At the beginning, I heard, like, some folk country. It almost reminded me, like, the Violent Femmes.
Ooh, yeah.
And then there was tons of surf influence all over the place in the way they played. And they had the stand-up string bass player, which always gets extra points. And but, yeah, it was, like, country and folk. And they would throw in occasionally there was, like, a metal riff thrown in that sounded like they were playing Sabbath.
Interesting.
And the backing vocals were good. He's a really good showman. He looks like he's one of, like those modelly good-looking singers. So,
mm-hmm.
like, he just had to, like, make smiley faces, and then half the crowd was melting. But, no, it was just, like, a big party. Everyone was dancing. Everyone was having a good time.
That was a Mohawk place, you said?
No, this was
the
Trelf.
Oh, okay. That's Trelf.
And no, it was fantastic. I would absolutely recommend him. I mean, if you just like old time rock and roll,
mm-hmm.
like that, like the great stuff the Beatles were doing in their earlier days, or Buddy Holly, I think is probably a great influence on them, and Dick Dale. So I think if you're into that stuff, like, go check them out. And if you check out the recordings, it actually kind of has almost like a garagey Black Keys, White Stripes kind of vibe to it. So the recorded stuff's really impressive too.
Nice.
So I'd recommend checking all of that out. And opening was an artist named Dylan Pratt,
mm-hmm.
who is from Arizona. He played by himself. He had a kind of a Tom York Radiohead before they got all whiny after OK Computer kind of voice.
Okay.
So it's very... I have notes written over there to describe what he sounds like, but I don't remember now.
Yeah.
I guess we should just pull this whole part of me talking
Reedy.
About
him.
But yes, check them out. They were great, and it was a really good time. And yeah,
oh, cool. All right, well, there's your music wrap up. We're gonna take a little break here on the Struggle's Real Buffalo Music Podcast, and we'll be right back with an interview with AJ Jordan
on allwnyradio.com.
Boom.
Yeah, I did that.
Bitches. I want to talk to you today about not relying on people. It's great when people believe in us, cheer us on, make us feel valuable. But here's the key. You can't become so dependent on people that you're getting your worth and value out of how they treat you.
Hello, everyone. It's me, your rival. You already know how many secrets I hold. First off, fuck who took the high road. You don't want to go unleash this psycho. Stabbed in the back, so I bleed survival. Been cheated blind, don't need a reprisal. Didn't do enough for you and I, though. Bullshit, bro, what were you and I wrote? Every single day in the studio I built, you don't even know how many feelings I felt. Fake friends screw me, assuming I'd help, intent with letting me do it by myself. Cocoon like I'm cruel, with your crew in my shell. A band about a world, but I'm cool with dying alone. You don't even care the real reason I'm writing a song. How many years of peers moving right along? Face those fears, tears fall when I struggle. Hate sitting here with a pen when I'm trouble. Waiting for the gears to kick in, but I fumble. No common sense to keep climbing when I bust. I'm cool with making our place with no support. Take it from the heart, aching from the start. Blame it all my fault. Hate me if you want. Basically, we're done. Face it, bro, you won. I hope you don't come around. Better watch it work when I become financially stable this time. These local slackers don't do anything to claim that they're down. Did you get pissed when I said, bro, I'm the man that you wish you could be? Are you mad about it? I don't need you. Look who fell off. Look who fell off. Didn't I do enough? Look who fell off. Look who fell off. Don't rely on a crew. Look who fell off. Look who fell off. I only ride with a few. Look who fell off. Look who fell off. How long you think I've been at it? Somehow you question my tactics. Who organized the whole tour by himself, destroyed by an addict? My hype man don't put an effort. My DJ's drunk skipping records. And my producer doesn't recognize he works for the legend. We would have been the greatest team if they kept this shit together. But somewhere down the road our egos got in the way, whatever. This is just a little what goes on in my mind. I guess they'll never figure whether he was clever till his death in a pine. What the fuck I gotta do to get it through to you? I'm invested all my time and patience just to wait and brood. Well, I'ma make it known, I ain't waiting no more. I give you take, they break it. Those empty promise makers, they use me like they used to do. But all I have to say is, I can't trust you for real. That's how you made me feel. But I'm sure in time it'll be alright, you'll forget what we did. Yeah, I'm that guy that your friends are always talking shit about, huh? I don't need you.
Look who fell off. Look who fell off.
Didn't I do enough?
Look who fell off. Look who fell off.
Don't rely on a crew.
Look who fell off. Look who fell off.
I only ride with a few.
Look who fell off. Look who fell off.
Fuck this, I'm over it. Don't forget you owing me. Who's the one that taught you how to make music loud, you phony cheats? Now when I drive by, you wanna lie like I don't notice things. Don't forget who introduced you to those shows your homie needs. I've mastered ceremonies while you're matching contradictions. And my prediction is you'll never fit with my existence until you learn to recommit yourself with good intentions. We could have made a million, but they all slacked on the mission. Like, where were you when I was fighting for the top logistics? No, I NT myself and I bless this hot ammunition. How many musicians you know that can write with the flow and then switch up the poem? Sing on a note when I give it a go. Pick at your mind with the wickedest goal. You're about to see the crescendo explode. Once I go crazy, there's nowhere to run. You don't really see what the fuck you did wrong. Maybe it's me or the reason I'm haunted. Nothing can faze me, I'm totally gone. Stuck in the back of your brain, let it rot. And everyone get fucked cause I don't give a shit. Go on without me. I don't need you.
Look who fell off. Look who fell off.
Didn't I do enough?
Look who fell off. Look who fell off.
Don't rely on a crew.
Look who fell off. Look who fell off.
I only ride with a few.
Look who fell off. Look who fell off. It's easy to become addicted to compliments, addicted to encouragement, addicted to them cheering you on. Now you rely on them to keep you feeling good about yourself, to always be there to validate you, to make you feel approved. Like a drug, if they don't keep you fixed, meet all your expectations, you get discouraged, feel inferior, work overtime to try to win their approval. The problem is, you're trying to get from people what only God can give. God can give.
I am Ryan Gurnett, with Dennis Reed Jr. as my co-host.
Hi.
And I am here to tell you that the struggle is real. And today, we have AJ Jordan, a local rapper of the Buffalo music scene for, what, 15 years?
Yes, sir. Hello, gentlemen. How's it going?
Welcome.
Oh, it's going great. Thanks for coming in.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I was listening to some of your music earlier, and kind of curious, what got you into rap? Why did you choose rap music?
That's a long story. Make a long story short. I was a military brat growing up. My dad was in the Air Force, and
growing up in Buffalo.
Well, I grew up in Buffalo till I was about 14. My parents separated when I was probably a toddler or whatever, and my dad, like he said, he was in the Air Force, so he moved around a lot, and my mom stayed up here, so I lived up here till I was about 14, and I was a little badass kid, and figured I didn't have a father figure in my life, so I needed to go move down there and learn a little bit more discipline and stuff like that, and I sure did, because, he put me in military boot camp, and the youth detention centers, and in and out of the psych ward for about 17 months.
Oh, wow.
From 15 to 18, I was pretty much locked up here and there, group homes and stuff like that. So, make a long story short, like I said, I was locked up in a youth detention center, and these kids would always beat on the concrete cinder block walls and make beats out of it, boom. You know, just do it like that, and then freestyle and rap and stuff like that. And I was always a poet and writing stuff, even when I was a little kid, just, you know, rhyming, but it was more poetry. So I never thought that you could make, like, music towards it. I never had heard rap before that. I was locked up pretty much my whole teenage life, so I never even really heard much music besides maybe, like, 103 The Fox when we were kids growing up. I'm sure you guys remember that, you know?
Certainly.
So, yeah, I was definitely, like, a metalhead, rocker, like, Metallica and Pantera. That was my stuff growing up, but then, you know.
So it wasn't even recorded music so much. It was actually, like, being around people who were making rap music and who were rapping with whatever they had around them.
It was a learning experience, definitely, yeah. It was cool. Just to, you know, learn the format of. They taught me the mathematics of it, how to work syllables and everything, you know, keep a cadence on the snare and everything like that. So yeah, it was a pretty interesting experience to pass the day while you're locked up and you only get like one day outside, so or 1 hour outside, I should say.
Right. Did you ever try any other, like, learn any instruments or anything when you got out, or was it all just vocal?
Oh yeah, I play the keyboard.
Oh, you do?
I play a little bit of drums, but it's mainly computerized, you know, mm-hmm. Digital, everything's digital nowadays, so, yeah, I just play a little bit of keyboard, just major chords and minor chords here and there. I can just do a little bit of that, so.
Where do your beats usually come from?
I have a couple different producers. I go online, there's all sorts of producers you can buy beats from exclusively, or you can lease them and, you know, make deals here and there. And then I have a local producer that went to Full Sail University and paid like $80,000 to go to school for that whole thing and learn all that. And we were starting to develop a business together and everything like that. And yeah.
So we gotta ask you about this because we saw this in your bio.
Mm-hmm.
You opened as part of a bill for ICP,
yeah.
Or you were at the Gathering of the Juggalos a couple years, right? Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, I performed at the Gathering twice. It was the first time was crazy because
by ICP we mean Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the Juggalo movement. It's huge across the world, really. And they showed me a lot of love, for sure. I try to differentiate myself as, like, an individual, first and foremost. I've always done that, so, I mean, I don't, you know, wear the clothes or anything like that, but I definitely follow the culture and know the people, and the people know me, so they invited me up there. The first year was really cool, because they put me on at, like, 3 in the morning, which is, like, the best time to do it, because it's, like, a 4 or 5 day event. And they're playing concerts all night till 6, 7 in the morning, basically till you pass out and wake up, you know, and you wake up and there's more shows. They had me on at like 3 in the morning, and I did like I drank like a 12-pack of Coors Light, and I drank probably like a 0.5 gallon of Jack Daniels like right before I went on stage. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I had a huge box of fireworks.
And that's great. You like that. Like, you like to... Was it just because it helped your nerves, or what?
Yeah, I don't really drink too much in concert anymore, but yeah, it was really a
definitely a nerve thing because there was thousands of people there, you know, so like, what am I going to do, you know, so, yeah, I'm always up there by myself. I don't have a full band, I'm a rapper, you know, I sing to a backing track that plays over the speakers, so, you know, you got to really be confident when you're up there, and I try to exude that confidence. People say that I have charismatic character while I'm up there or whatever. I'm all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like I just brought a whole bunch of fireworks and cartons of cigarettes and CDs and t-shirts, and I was just throwing them out there and lighting off fireworks and having a great time. And then the second year they invited me around, they kind of gave me the shaft because they put me on like the last day in like the middle of the daytime, and it was like 110 degree weather, and they didn't give me my artist like VIP pass to like get a wash up and a shower before I went on stage or get cleaned up or do any of that stuff, you know, that I had gotten the year before. And I guess it's because they had switched management and all this.
I kind of
got the
bone
the second time around, and oh, that was crazy. We had to run all the way across the other side of the gathering, and it's literally probably 5-10 mile stretch. It's a huge thing. Yeah, I've opened for a lot of big people like ICP, and Tech N9ne is the most number one independent rapper in the world. I guess he sold like a couple million records independently through his own record label. He's not signed to Capitol or anything big like that. He does his own Strange Music records and or Strange Music Inc. Yeah, something like that. But
I'm not familiar. You have a DVD called Life and Times, I noticed on your website when I was perusing it earlier. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yeah,
is that a new thing, or has that been around a while? I couldn't.
That's kind of old. I put out my debut CD, Sentimental Situations. You can buy it on iTunes right now. I put that out in 2012. And then the DVD came out like a year or two after that, which was like basically I had a camera guy following me around for 2 years through all those experiences of performing at the gathering and opening for Tech N9ne. And
did he record the fireworks and
everything? Yeah, I got to. Yeah, we got the fireworks up
cool.
And the cigarettes throwing them all out and
fantastic. Everything.
Yeah.
So what was in it for this guy? Did you like hire him to follow you around, or was he just he wanted to be a documentary
producer?
Yeah,
I hired him to follow me around. I think I hired him for like $400, and he followed me around with like three cameras for like almost 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You know, on and off, but it's only like maybe like one or two concerts a month unless we were going on tour. Then he came with me for like 3 or 4 weeks. That's pretty crazy. We went on tour for 2 months in 2014, and that's a whole nother story we could get into there.
What is the day job? What do you do to sustain yourself, like 9 to 5?
I'm a website designer for probably 10, 15 clients between here and Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Rochester, Albany, Syracuse. I do websites for everybody, you name it. A lot of bands and artist development. I run 3 tattoo shop websites out here with all their portfolios, madtattoo.com with a 2. You can check all their portfolios out and everything like that. I've built a pet crematorium, pet cemetery website. I've built gym membership websites. I've built e-commerce, like clothing, fashion websites, everything. I got a couple pole dancing exotic dancers out in Philadelphia that I help to maintain and run their website. It's a little hodgepodge, melting pot of everything. I like to keep it versatile, you know.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, you have a lot of different examples of your of your print design too.
I guess
flyers and everything.
And
where'd you learn design?
I went to school to the Art Institute of Dallas, probably 2000, 2003, in between there. I didn't graduate, but I learned a lot, so, you know, I went, like, right around when the dot-com era was, you know, starting to die down, so I just missed that, you know what I mean? But
you're just after the bubble.
Yeah, exactly. I'm starting to learn now about affiliate marketing and all this stuff that I'm getting into with advertising banners and pay-per-click and all that stuff. We'll have to talk about that off time sometime. But
okay. So what else? So I listened to the song "Look Who Fell Off."
Yeah.
Today. And are there? Do you feel like, you know? Are the lyrics in that one autobiographical? Do you feel like there's a lot of people who kind of like
Yeah, that's definitely
betrayed you, or is that what it is? Is it about betrayal, or that you left them behind?
Yeah, it's about betrayal. You know, but like I said, I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. I've kind of been doing everything myself since the beginning, and trying to get a team to back me. But really, you know, it's on some rap music, so it's kind of hard to have people come together for the common cause unless I'm putting out a positive message, which is what I've been trying to write more of lately, you know. So yeah, that song is about the tour that we did in 2014, and I did a crowdfunding campaign online and raised $5,000, and I sent out thousands and thousands of t-shirts and CDs and autographed posters and little wristbands and dog tags, and I got $3,000 in the hole before I even went out on tour, and then I came home and I was $3,000 in tour, so I actually spent $6,000 over my budget on top of the $5,000 that we had paid to send everything out. And I had like a DJ on tour with me, and he was just drinking all night and getting wasted, and my hype man was just trying to go screw groupies and gallivant around the city and do whatever they could, you know. And I told everybody, you know,
what's a hype man?
A hype man's the guy that says like you're rhyming the words that rhyme at the end of a sentence, you know what I mean? So
I know what he's talking about.
I have no idea.
You say, like, the dog jumps the fence, and then he'll say, the fence, you know what I mean? The dog jumps the fence, the fence.
Oh, okay.
You know
he's like, also kind of in charge of, like, crowd control.
Like, yeah, get
so,
up,
like,
get
he
your
wants
hands
to get people
up,
excited.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Okay, so he's part of the rap
like,
performance. Like a...
You probably remember Public Enemy, Flavor Flav.
Oh, yeah.
Like real hype and just going at it, you know? He's all over the place, too, but really, the guy that I had wasn't really all over the place. He was just so unconfident. He was always in my shadow, and I think that was kind of a problem between us. We butted heads and we were stubborn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote like 80% of his lyrics for him whenever I tried to put like a group project together. He was always bugging me to be a solo artist to get out from under my shadow, and I'm like, okay, well, we'll do this project and see where you go from there. And he didn't pick it up or try to do anything with it.
So that was part of the inspiration for the song?
Yeah, I'm like, you know, I'm still doing everything myself. Like, if we're going to put a group project together, where's your investment? Like, you guys all fell off. I'm still doing it, you know? Yeah, it's basically the gist of it, yeah.
So before we get into the story, because, of course, we have themes about the band life and, you know, things that happen to musicians in Western New York, and we ask a lot of people about them.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go into that part of your story, where do you feel you're at right now? Like, what would constitute, are things on an upswing for AJ Jordan? Are they on a downswing? What does success look like?
I don't know. I don't feel like I'll ever be satisfied.
Yeah.
To be completely honest, it feels like a Buffalo thing. You know what I mean? Like, we've always lost, and we're just waiting for that moment to win, and when it happens, and I'll be somewhat happy, but I'm never gonna be satisfied. I'm always gonna try to top the next thing that I do, you know, and keep going from there. So right now I'm in a position that's pretty comfortable. I mean, I'm not gonna say I don't have my own problems. I'm going through a custody battle in court right now. A baby mother doesn't let me see my daughter, and she's 14, and she's got a lot of,
baby
insecure issues and things like that. My 14-year-old daughter is out there gallivanting around on social media.
Oh, you look young to have a
14-year-old.
Boys.
I'm 33, yeah.
Wow.
We had her when I was like 19, 20.
Wow.
So it's been a journey. So I'm going through that right now in custody court and everything, and trying to just do everything that I can to make as much money as I can and build a foundation for my family. I've had a girlfriend for the last 6 or 7 years that I'm working on a big surprise for in the next couple months and everything. A lot of things going on in the works.
Oh, so, great.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of good things on the upswing, you know what I mean? I can't let myself get... I try to be humble, but I can't let myself get depressed or put myself down because there's no time for it.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
There really isn't. So,
yeah, and it sounds like you got a lot going on, too, like between the web design.
You have a lot
and
of clients pulling me left and right. I'm always
the
burning the candle at both ends, and I find myself very very fatigued most of the time, but I've been doing, like, water fasting and eating nothing but fruits and vegetables for the last couple weeks, so I'm just, like, on top of it. I'm trying to lose a lot of weight this summer. I'm just sick of the gut, and I'm like, yo, I just need to go go hard with it.
Yeah.
Running laps around me.
So, let's go.
what is the local hip-hop scene like? Is it big? Do you feel like it's running successfully? Do you think it might need a little boost? Do you think people aren't getting along? Like, what's
There's
your take
no
on
unity in the scene altogether, the music scene, and it's pretty sad and pathetic because I go across the country and I see all sorts of cities where other bands and other rappers and other artists and labels are all working together to put the city on the map and bring it up to a bigger forefront, you know, a bigger foundation for everybody. And a lot of people don't really work together out here. They're all, you know, egotistical, out for themselves, and they say that they got your back, but really they only got their back as far as they need you, and then they're gone. And, you know, that's just kind of how Buffalo seems to be. There's a lot of I'm not really considered like real hip hop out here, quote unquote. I don't know what you think real hip hop is, because it's creativity. I know the facets of hip hop is, you know, breakdancing, graffiti, you know, all that stuff, turntablism, and I try to incorporate all of that. I'm an artist and I draw. I kind of know how to dance a little bit. I got rhythm or whatever, you know. My buddy can breakdance like crazy, and I got a DJ that definitely knows how to turntable, old school wax vinyl records, and we used to sample like Simon and Garfunkel and all sorts of old stuff to make beats. So yeah, it's a love for music that'll never go away, you know. Definitely.
What could Buffalo do better? What have you seen in other cities that established more of a, you know, that seemed like more of a scene, like people were sort of more there for each other musically?
The local artists could definitely try harder as far as bringing their friends into the concerts. There's not as much support for a local concert anymore. There's always like, oh, I got this, that, and the third going on, or I got a doctor's appointment and working this and that tomorrow, like, you know what I mean? But in other places, you go to like Cleveland and you see these local openers that are open for big nationals, and they're selling out their tickets, 50 to 100, 150 tickets to get that slot, and they're bringing all their people in, and then that's making the promoters look at them like, oh, well, we need to keep continuing booking more shows. That doesn't happen out here. What happens out here is they bring like 15 of their own little friends who don't pay to get in because they're all part of the crew, and then they perform and they leave, and everyone gets in a fight out in the parking lot, and then the promoter doesn't want to book any more hip-hop shows. You see it on the news all the time. You see shootings, you see stabbings. That's on some major record label rap that comes out here too. That's not even on an independent local tip. We don't fight that much, but it's starting to get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just getting more and more egotistical, and I'm just starting to take a back route towards it and focus more on the artwork. You know, more so, because I feel like I'm going a lot farther with it, and I don't know. I've always had a forte with artwork and an eye for that before music, even though that rhythm will always be in me.
Yeah, well, it's great. You got other things you can do too. You know, you're a triple threat, a quadruple threat. What do they say?
Is there like a white hip hop scene and a black hip hop scene?
No, it's like there's no racism, no prejudice or whatever the word is,
prejudice in
the local scene. There's always white and black artists, and even Hispanic and all sorts of cultures rapping whenever we do local shows, and I don't see that.
Okay.
You know, as far as skin color and all that goes, I've got plenty of multinational friends. Like I said, I've got people overseas that listen to my music in Tokyo and Australia and Asia and Zimbabwe and places I don't even know. It's crazy. I go and look at the stats on my website and I'm like, holy crap, like I don't even recognize half of these places. So it's great. And people are messaging me in foreign languages, and I gotta go on Google Translate and try to talk to them and say, oh, thank you for buying my t-shirt, you know, and I'll send it overseas. And, you know, you buy a t-shirt for $15, but it costs me $20 to send it overseas, but thanks for the support. You know, it's cool. It's cool just to have those people that are over there. I can't even imagine that somebody's over there wearing my shirt right now or listening to my song right now. Sometimes I'll pull up to even one of my friend's house or, like, a local friend and, like, pull into their driveway and they're bumping my song. I'm like, oh, God, I better listen to my music again. But it still gives you that magical feeling, like the butterflies inside, you know, like, wow, it's really happening, you know, something that's really out there, you know. I just kind of want to leave a legacy for myself and my kid, you know, and my children. Just, I don't know, I don't want to be a person that just dies off in the history books. Like, you guys are doing something here to leave a mark for yourselves, too, with the podcast that's going to be in digital history forever, you know what I mean? We'll be up.
We're making history.
Definitely.
That's right.
Right now, we are making history.
Yeah.
Where'd you record your last album? Like, one of the things that really struck me when I listened to your music is that I thought the production quality was great on that stuff.
Oh, nice. Thank you. Yeah, I do a lot of my own home mixing. I have a home recording studio, and then my buddy that went to Full Sail, he's got a recording studio in Williamsville that's about $20,000. We got a SLR mixer and like a $1,000 microphone and all that stuff. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It took us a good 10 to 15 years to figure out what not to use to record music.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just trial and error. And when we started, we had like a little, like, pen microphone to the computer, you know, like one of those U-Tech mics, like an old school, and recording on like Cool Edit Pro or something like that way back in the day.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cool Edit Pro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was like my go-to program. I still use it every once in a while to normalize and mix my concert tracks.
And one more question. Gathering of the Juggalos, what percent of people are wearing makeup?
About 80%, 75%, 80%, and 110-115 degree weather, like, for a week straight.
I get
no
some
showers.
I get some of the stuff about Gathering of the Juggalos. Like, if I'm not into it, like, I can understand why other people are into it. I cannot get the face. I don't get the face paint. Yeah. Me, that's the one thing where that just, I completely missed the boat on.
You weren't
that.
In the Kiss Army, dude?
Right. I mean, I've always painted my face even before I knew of ICP. With Alice Cooper and Said Kiss and all these other, even like wrestling, you know, like,
oh yeah,
I'm trying to think, like, Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah,
it was like that was my stuff back in the day. So, just to have that little bit of creativity to go even further, I'd paint my face before I learned anything about the Juggalo culture. You could go back in my pictures from like 1998 and look, and I had like crazy long white hair and red face paint with white eyes, and I kind of toned it down now for the kids.
But you would do that just as like, you know, out partying, or you would do that as a performer in your performing life? Or?
Every once in a while, I'll paint my face, just, you know, if I feel like going out there and being a little different. Yeah, if you look on my youtube.com/AJJordan, that song you mentioned, Fell Off, I have a video for, and I painted my face like a checker style, and then I wore like a checkered shirt, so like really cool looking trippy effects to it. Yeah, I like doing visuals.
Oh, neat.
So I'm a visual person.
So you mentioned before, as a hip-hop artist, it's it's mostly you. I mean, I guess I've learned today that there's a hype master. Is that what we call them? A hype man.
You sound like my dad.
I know. A hype man. And then there's also, you got the turntable dude I knew about.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel like you can rely on these people? Like, do you ever wish you had more bandmates?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would love to have a band behind me. I had a drummer at one point in our tour, and I loved having the drumming, live drumming aspect of it, because you can be flexible with your cadence, and when I mean cadence, it's how you flow to the beat, and, you know, how you stay on a melody or a pattern or a rhythm to the beat. So when you have
studied medieval drama.
Yeah,
I know about cadence.
Cadence, yeah. So when you have a live drummer, you can just flow your cadence a little easier.
You can improvise a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I loved having the live drum aspect, and I have a great guitarist. I'm actually working on some acoustic rock project right now that I'm going to be putting out on my next CD. So, Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Oh, neat. You're getting into some different genres, too.
Yeah, I've been talking to Robbie Takic from the Goo Goo Dolls, the bassist from the Goo Goo Dolls. Mm-hmm. He's in really good with Mad Tattoo and Mark Madden and all that. And I'm hoping to get him on my project there. I have, you guys probably heard Jim Candytree from Super Killer Robots or Whiskey Reverb, the old Whiskey Reverb.
I've heard of Whiskey Reverb.
I got them on my next CD.
Oh, great.
Up,
oh, that's
so
awesome.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to facilitate the artists of Buffalo and bring us all together. So, and on a positive aspect, you know, I'm talking about the the current events and media and, you know, news and all this crazy stuff that's going on, how they put fluoride in the water and stuff is full of GMOs and you name it. I don't want to talk too much about what I'm going to be releasing. But
yeah, we need to get down the rabbit hole. Well, to, a little bit more about the project. Do you have a release date, or you're still just getting together? Or
My songs,
just so people can look out for it if they're.
My songs are probably like 90% written and 50% recorded. I kind of go in the studio a little weird. I record all my choruses, and if I need any choir or people to help back me to bring like a different approach to the sound that isn't my voice, like I could sing different octaves and stuff like that, but if I need a higher or a lower pitch, then I'll bring other people in. And I've just been developing the kind of like a, it's kind of like a musical almost on CD. So it's cool. A lot of different voices in the choruses and a choir sound with, yeah, it's a really orchestrated thing that I'm working on right now with a lot of live instruments and a lot of digital instruments too. But,
great. Any working title or overall theme?
I think probably in fall. And I'm going to be calling it, I haven't really announced it yet, so I'll announce it here for you guys on an exclusive.
Our first exclusive.
All right.
It's actually going to be called The City of No Illusions, and cool. It's a play on the old nickname from Buffalo, New York in 1901 when the Pan-American Exposition came around.
Sure.
And President William McKinley was assassinated and all that. So I'm kind of taking that visual concept of the old school 1901, and I'm gonna do a photo shoot in front of the Botanical Gardens in black and white with old school wardrobe and top hat and all that, and I'm gonna be doing a photo shoot with that and trying to bring back a little life to that, you know, the whole like Nikola Tesla inventing electricity and bringing it around right around that time. And that's just a fascinating story if you do your research around 1898 to 1901, 1902 is a great time in Buffalo.
Yeah, Buffalo had a lot to do with that early...
The industrial, definitely.
And the early application of electricity, because mm-hmm. we had Niagara Falls.
Yep.
And they were the first ones to push that current out through North Tonawanda into Buffalo. And
yeah.
Buffalo was called the City of Light during the Pan Am
exactly.
Exposition.
Yeah, and also the City of No Illusions was another nickname during the Pan American
Exposition.
Yes,
yeah, I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It was a pretty cool play on that. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to use that.
Yeah, well, good luck. Can't wait to see you come up
yeah,
with.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, please, just continue with your method.
Yeah. Okay. Math is a wonderful thing. Math is a really cool thing. So get off your ass, let's do some math. Math, 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 math. 3 minus 4 is... -1. That's right. And 6 times 1 billion is...
6 billion?
Nailed it. And 54 is a 45 more than what is the answer, Martha?
9.
No, it's 8.
No, it's 9.
Yes, I was testing you. It's 9. And that's a magic number.
We have on our show, we try to ask people to talk about events that happened to them. And one of our themes that we're kind of interested in, being local musicians ourselves, is promoters, and specifically run-ins with promoters that that are maybe interesting or make for an interesting story. So you mentioned in your pre-interview with us that you had such a story.
Do I? Well, I had went out on a 25-city tour that took me 2 years to book myself. I probably called every small venue in America, literally hundreds of venues every day for 2 years straight. I did a GoFundMe campaign that raised $5,000 online, and I gave hats and t-shirts and stickers and wristbands and necklaces out for donating, which actually put me in the red before we went out on tour. So when we went out on tour, you know, it's a real small, independent rap show. We were only expecting maybe 50 to 100 people. And I get to every one of these venues, and we have like less than 50 people around, 25, 50 people every show, maybe 100 people at a couple shows every once in a while. And so I get to these venues, and they want me to pay for the security. They want me to pay for the sound guy. They want me to pay for the bartender that's working that night. They want me to pay for the lighting guy. And I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? A couple of these places weren't too bad because they're so run down. They're like hole-in-the-wall bars. Maybe $100, $150 a night, which was okay. But when I'm already $3,000 in the hole and I only have $2,000 left and I'm keep shelling these out and I got 20 more cities to go, it got pretty bad. So by the time we had got to Chicago, which is already probably the number one murder capital in the country right now, somewhere close to Detroit, which I think we were supposed to do, but we canceled because there was we canceled St. Louis because of the Ferguson events were happening in 2014. At that same time, we had to drive right through it. But yeah, we went to Chicago and we were scheduled to perform at a reggae club in the west side of the city. And when we got there, we're like, okay, looks cool, whatever. And we get up to the venue, and there's bullet holes all in the window. And I'm like, oh, gosh, here we go.
So do you remember the name of the venue?
Roots something. I can't remember for the life of me. I'd probably try to sue me if I said. we got in the venue, and we didn't even bring any equipment in or anything like that yet, and the promoter comes flying out of the back. I think he was probably all coked up or on drugs or something, and he's like, okay, you guys owe me this, that, and the third for the night, and da 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 da. And I'm like, wait, what do you mean we owe you? He basically wanted like $300 he was trying to extort from us before anybody even got in the door, before, you know, anybody paid to get in to see the show. I'm like, we didn't even bring any equipment in yet. And so he gets his security guard to start, like, elbowing me and muscling me into the back room. And, like, these two big black dudes are start elbowing me into the back room. And I'm like, what's going on here? They're just like, come back in the back room until we get what we need from you. And I'm like, until you pay us. You're not leaving. And I'm like, are you kidding me right now? And I had to tell one of my stage crew off on the way, I'm like, yo, somebody needs to call the cops right now. Like, yeah. Somebody needs to call the cops. So eventually I'm like, hey, this is getting a little too heavy right now. Like, they started, like, really muscling in us and everything and saying, what do you got in your pockets?
So it wasn't just you, it was a bunch of others.
It was me and, like, three other people. I brought six guys on tour with me, and I think that there was, like, two or three in the van getting stuff ready to pull out. And to pull out to get and put in the venue. And so I was like, oh, well, this is getting a little too heated right now. Let me go see what's going on with the van and what's going on with my guys and our equipment, and I'll come back in and talk to you. And he let us go outside for a little bit to have a cigarette and basically assess the situation and if we could bring in equipment and if I even could afford to pay the guy this, which was not going to happen. So we got outside, and this whole gang of dudes in a car drives by, and they're like, hey, you guys banging? And we're like, what? And they're like, are you banging? And they pull out these guns on us, like we see the muzzles. And we're like, oh, hold up. So we had to go back inside with the two security guards who started elbowing us to the back room again. Then those four dudes came in. They were friends with the security dudes. They had a whole gang of people there keeping us in the back room, Luckily, while we were outside, one of my friends had called the cops already, and it was like a female police officer from Chicago and like two other officers. I didn't even get the chance to look, because the female security officer came up and she's like, half these dudes are on probation, half these dudes have pistols on them, you guys better get the hell out of Dodge now. And she, like, went like this to let us all go behind her, like, you know, put her arms up against the wall, like, you know, just form a wall for us to let us all leave. And she's like, you better drive out of Chicago as fast as you possibly can.
Wow.
And that end of the story, we literally booked out of Chicago faster than I've ever, probably 100, 120 miles an hour in a little minivan all the way down the thruway. Or what, they don't even call it a thruway out there. This is New York. They call it a highway or whatever out there, you know. Yeah.
That was at the end of the tour?
No, that was right towards the middle. Right towards the middle. So my guys are already starting to... half of them hadn't even left the state. They hadn't even left Buffalo. And by the time we got to Cleveland, they were crying that they wanted to go home to their mamas. So...
it's not for everyone.
No, it's really not. It's a sacrifice, you know, and I already understood that. I brought... beef jerky and crackers and peanut butter and jelly. I lived down the streets out of a book bag for probably 5 years of my life, for, you know, when I got out of being locked up in the psych ward from 15 to 18. I was out on my own from 18 to now. I've been just doing it. So I lived out of a book bag trying to find myself for years, and I know what the meaning of sacrifice and struggle is, you know, definitely. And, yeah, what was the point of that story? Yeah, it's just that these kids had never really witnessed, you know, really never experienced that.
Yeah, they weren't ready for the road.
Yeah, definitely not. So by the time we got to Cleveland, they were like, man, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know. We had to cancel Dallas, Texas, and Houston, which is like some of my biggest fans out there. Like I said, I went to school in Dallas, and I know a lot of people out there, and I was really looking forward to it, and these guys were crying a river when we got to like Tulsa, Oklahoma. Like, we almost got arrested because we had a little bit of weed on us, and these dudes wanted to after the here's another funny one. After the show, these girls are at the show, and they're like, hey, this is cool, you guys want to come? We said, do you want to come to our after party and ride in the van with us to our after party? And they're like, oh, fine, sure. So one of my tour mates was driving, speeding a little faster than he should have through the back skirts of Tulsa, Oklahoma, with two really cracked out girls in the back seat that I didn't approve of. And cops pulled us over and say that the two girls have warrants on them. So in the meantime, while we're getting pulled over, these girls are pouring their purses in the back seat.
Uh-oh.
Pouring their purses out on the floor, dumping them out. And the cops pulled them out. And then they pulled us out, and then they searched the van. They find needles and spoons and little baggies. I don't do none of that stuff. I've never touched none of that stuff. I just smoke a little weed. I drink socially, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're like, where'd this come from? And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, like, we almost started crying. Like, right there, we started sobbing, and the dude's like, hey, I don't know nothing about this. We're in the middle of Tulsa. We're from New York. You know, we're just a couple of, you know, independent hip-hop entertainers that are touring around the country on our first tour. And he's like, hey, have you ever heard of Big Smo, the rapper? And he starts showing me this country rapper on YouTube. The police officer's sitting right there next to us. And he's like, is there anything else you guys got in the car? Because he knew that those drugs weren't ours. And we're like, yeah, we got, like, you know, a half ounce of weed. And he's like, oh, really? And he's like, he cracks the weed and he looks at it. And I think he probably took a little bit out for himself. He gives it right back to us. And he's like, go ahead, carry on, just don't get shot out here.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, thank God. I'm telling you, I'm spiritually guided on some kind of mission, man, because I'm still here doing it.
Yeah. As soon as you said two girls got in the van, that story either has a really awesome ending or a really bad ending.
Like I said, I've had a girlfriend for 6-7 years, so you know, I know the meaning of commitment right now is my top priority is building a foundation for my family, so I ain't out gallivanting and screwing around while I'm on tour. I'm handling business. I should have made all those dudes sign contracts for sure.
So, for the Chicago show, so were you like the headlining act from out of town even?
Yeah, and then we figured next tour we would rework it so that, you know, some of the bigger named artists in their cities were headliners and bringing their own people in, and then we would open the show or perform in the middle. That way it wasn't, you know, we're coming to your town and we're these big shots when we really aren't nobody. You know, I'm not humble enough to admit that I know I'm still just a person in Buffalo trying to squeeze my last dollar to make it.
Why, do you think that kind of worked against you? Do you think, like, booking that way made people think that they could shake you down for a little bit more than...
Yeah, definitely. They thought it was some big shot, and they're like, oh, you got this money to headline across America. Plus, I brought a lot of equipment, like lasers and fog machines, and I brought a huge 12-foot projector screen with a really expensive, like, $1,000 projector and, like, equipment that no, like... small artists would really do, you know. I had this microphone that had LED lights that lit up all across it, different colors and everything, and it was a really cool visual experience for people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
did you book the whole thing yourself?
Yeah, I called, I emailed.
Because when the subject was Promoters from Hell, I didn't understand
literally,
immediately.
It's hell.
This was a local promoter out there.
The music industry is hell. Yeah. The music industry is a crazy struggle. I emailed probably 500 to 600 venues, and I got booked at 25 of them across the country, and we're talking dive bars. Like, the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
So, that's what I you know, keep my expectations low, so I don't have them set to my standards too high. No.
Was that the biggest tour you ever tried to go out on?
I had toured with former members of the 3-6 Mafia called the Prophet Posse back in, I think it was 2009. That was pretty cool. It was called America's Nightmare Tour. And I think I went from, like, here to Chicago on 9 or 10 dates like that, following them out of pocket. I was so blunted and high, I couldn't remember. They just kept passing blunt to blunt after half those dudes are passed away, so rest in peace, you know. But, yeah, I've done shows with three, they're called The Mafia 6 now. I think it's just Juicy J and DJ Paul are the only ones around now. Maybe Crunchy Black is still alive, I'm not sure, but yeah, I got to meet all of them, hang out with all of them, they're really cool people, and they won Grammys for their rap music, like, literally. Was it Crossroads? No, that's Bone Thugs won a Grammy for that, but
yeah,
it's crazy. It's, like I said, you put a positive message into it, and you can get anywhere with it, you know.
We're going to play one of your songs now.
Awesome.
Yeah, and do you want to tell us a little bit about the song that we're about to hear?
This song either is Where's Our Future, featuring an artist from Philadelphia named Whitney Payton, who was actually on a Grammy-nominated anti-bullying CD, and their whole camp won that. So congrats to her for being a part of that. That definitely would be something cool. And I can relate to the anti-bullying for sure. Yeah, but it's Where's Our Future? It's talking about current events. I think actually it was more around when Obama was in office. Like I said, I put it out in 2012.
All right, thanks, AJ. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, sir. Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate it.
Yo, what's good? All the way from Philadelphia to Buffalo. It's your boy, AJ Jordan, Whitney Payton, LA Productions. Everybody wanna listen to the way I flow. I keep it strange, stay out my way, cause I'm an animal. I'm getting money and the fame comes with regardless. Half of you critics I have just labeled as retarded. Smash your computer browsing internet garbage. Online users are losers seeking senseless drama. People only want what's yours until they got what's yours. And then they out that door, today nobody has honor. Push it off and procrastinate until tomorrow. Why keep stalling what you should be starting now on? The man that doesn't get it for a minute, take a second. Walk in my shoes and you will see eventually I got something to prove. With my eye on the prize, dying, why will I fly in the sky, find my demise? You know we ain't got nothing to lose, and I'm a sucker for proof. We're out of luck and we're doomed, you better duck for the boom. We're gonna burn, they'll never learn. It's none of your concern. Attention, watch a chick spit. Cause I'm only throwing bombs if the shit's lit. Everybody wanna make it and get rich quick. About to blow them out the water, time to sink ships. It's sink or swim, so you better get your floaties on. I earned my patches, you just went ahead and sewed yours on. Yes, you better check my resume. It's like a novel and it's getting better every day. When I make it, I'ma feed the kids starving. They need dinner more than I need a Ferrari.
sit around and buy necklaces. Wow, I just called you out. If you're making money, yup, I just called you out. It's cause I'm tired of everything that they rap about. When corporate greed keeps filling up their bank account,
we're gonna burn, they'll never learn. It's none of your concern.
Cause you're about to hear me spit twice. It's AJ Jordan, Whitney Payton, you're the sick like. Them thorough children only think for the food was slick rice. Someone tell me if you think that they think that this is right. Yo man, that's horrible, I trade my soul for sure. All of the people that are so ignorant, they have no excuse. We're coming out from a different culture to call out anyone because everyone's seeming like they need a counselor. The weight is definitely on an individual's shoulders. Let's do something about hate before we're too late, it's over. We're all responsible for what we cause. Politicians are problematic operators by law. But do you realize that we've all been disinformed? The government controls this while we just conform. They don't want smart musicians with intelligent fans, because you listen and you learn and it would ruin their plans.
We're gonna burn.
Races and tribes, natives and immigrants, Christians and Muslims and Jews cannot stand. These now are the walls we must tear down.
We're gonna burn, they'll never learn. It's none of your concern. Someone tell me, where's our future? We're gonna burn, they'll never learn. It's none of your concern.
That's it. We'll be back in a couple weeks with episode 5, where we sit down with circuit and mind-bending prog rocker Charles Quagliana, the Wizard of McCarthy Park.
He's behind the project, The Left Hand of Darkness. He's going to tell us about his insane gadgets and setups, and as the guy who often runs the sound at Mr. Goodbar, he'll tell us the 5 things you should never say to a sound man. All right, so you can find us on allwnyradio.com. You can go and check out the other great programming, including streaming web radio of all local music. There's blogs, reviews.
Other cool podcasts.
Reviews by me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then there's podcasts, including Corey's Comments and Think So Joe, mm-hmm. which it's hosted by this guy. His name might be Mike, I think.
I think it rhymes with so. Think so.
Mary?
Rebecca.
No. Bo?
I want to say it's Jim Jim.
Okay, so the Think So Joe podcast with Jim Jim Kent. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/thestruggleisrealpodcast. We are on the Twitters. Please, if you have a question, send it to us. Become our 13th follower on Twitter. We are at SIRPodcastNY, and if you want to,
good luck.
If you want to bother our personal accounts, you can send praise to me. I am at Sir William and then Idol, spelled IDOL, mm-hmm. and you can send all of your complaints to Dennis, who yep. is at AGEN. BYTE.
Correct.
Agenbite?
Yep, Agenbite.
It sounds like a foreign food. Our band, The Lady of the Tiger, will be at Hot Mama's Canteen Ooh. On December 9th. We're playing from 6 to 8.
I think that's right.
Yep. And we're going to be playing at Stamps on December 22nd. If you go to ajjordan.net, you can download just more A.J. Jordan songs than you can listen to in a day, I think.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a 75-song download in zip format with all kinds of his music on there. So if you liked the little bit that we played earlier, go check out some more and support him. He's a good dude.
And you can check him out again